basically, when we're talking about this, we're talking about usable space. Some of the things that can take away from usable space are too sloped, wetlands, FEMA flood zone, all these areas, you know, these panels can't go in. So it has to be usable space that can be used for these panels. So,
and the slopes would be an issue because they wouldn't get the sunshine, right? You can't move them if it...
Yeah, or there has to be a lot of grading that has to happen, which makes the project too expensive and things like that.
You're looking for like this perfect piece of land, and then you have to take all these considerations into it.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit Podcast. Heather, it's so great to be here once again.
I know. For those of you who can't see us, I think I'm shrinking, like, or the seat is shrinking.
These are kind of comfortable chairs, I guess you could say. So we have to boost ourselves up a little bit.
I'm actually on a pillow.
Kind of like when you were in the restaurant, you'd have to sit on those little booster seats.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about those.
Yes. But today is a very special episode. It is our 100th episode of the Turning Profit Podcast. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Is there like a way to get like... I don't know. Some sort of
sound effect, possibly. Yeah,
or like fireworks or like, fireworks. No, confetti. That's what I'm
confetti,
looking for.
Confetti, yes. We'll do that during the post-processing, the video editing stage. Yes. So today, we picked a super exciting topic for our 100th episode, and that is going to be talking about solar farms. And not just solar farms, but how to identify the perfect piece of land for a solar farm. So I know this is a topic you're very excited about.
I think it's so funny. I was just thinking in my head, like, there is a segment of the population that's like, yes, this is this is what I need. I need to know all this. And then there's a segment that are going to be like, okay.
Solar and renewable energy is actually a big direction for our company going forward. So I figured it was kind of fitting for us to do this as a topic for our 100th episode of the Turning Profit Podcast.
But Pete, what about the upcoming administration?
I don't think that'll impact it at all. I mean, I guess they could say that we're going to ban solar or something like that. Hopefully something like that doesn't happen. But all indications are that the main incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act for solar energy will remain the same.
Yeah, the new administration from their past efforts are not a, what's the nice way to put this? They're not a fast moving ship by any means. So any direction that they take, they're not known for like making instant decisions. So I think that even if they were to change course, that it would take a little bit of time to catch up.
Well, here's the thing. Solar is not going anywhere because the price of solar is getting so cheap that it's the cheapest version of electricity that we have now. Now, obviously, it only produces electricity during the day, but that combined with storage can provide power at all times. And when I say it's the cheapest version, that means that there's incentives for lots of different people within the energy market to actually install and use solar rather than the more expensive alternatives, which at this point are actually natural gas and coal are actually more expensive than solar is in most cases now.
So even if you're a climate change denier because you can't understand basic science, you're saying that this is still money talks.
Yeah, and that's this right. Is cheaper. That's what's going to drive our path forward. So I really feel like there are many tailwinds in the renewable energy space. And I feel like as land investors, we are always looking at properties out there. And this is one area where we can make a big impact going forward, particularly working on the development of these properties to get them to the point where they are ready to build for a solar farm development.
And why are you so excited about this?
It's pretty obvious to me that that's where the market's going, that this is a great opportunity right now, and it will be probably for the next 10 years or so. And I feel like we're uniquely positioned to make this happen.
Right. So if you have an understanding of land and acquisitions and stuff, this is just like...
Right.
I personally like it because it's better for the environment.
Yes.
So I don't know. I think that we can make a big change by just doing these little things. And you are just excited about it.
Like, yeah, I'm very excited.
Just
about
in a business sense, I can tell you're excited about it.
It's a great opportunity. I feel like it's a no-brainer opportunity. Ultimately, we'll see. I don't think that there's many ways that this could lose right now. So I feel like...
you're like right now.
Right now. Well, in the current climate that we have, I really feel like that it's a freight train that can't be stopped. Maybe that's a good analogy.
That's funny because that's a negative, but with a positive ending there.
Yeah,
a freight
there you go.
Chain that can't me there stop, but in a good way.
In a good way.
Okay.
Not every piece of land is actually suitable for a solar farm development. There's all kinds of solar farms. There's all kinds of different solar installations. You could have them on your roof. You could have them on the roof of a commercial building, something like that. Or you can have them on a big piece of land where you've probably seen these large solar arrays. It's a farm maybe that has actually converted to actually producing solar electricity rather than the crops that it was producing before.
But I think there's different ones because we were talking about this before that it's not like in my mind when I envision solar farms, I'm kind of like looking at the solar panels like for our pool, mm-hmm. right?
Okay, that's a different type of solar.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So this looks different. Like mm-hmm. just for people who need a visual. You also, I remember pointing out when we were driving to Vegas one time, like that has even a different look, right?
Yeah, that one that we pass on the way to Vegas on the 15, that is a, I forget the name of that type of facility, but that's basically a bunch of mirrors out in the middle of the desert pointing to one single spot and that produces heat basically. So all those mirrors pointing at that one spot, it's like taking a magnifying glass outside. It's like compresses all the rays of the sun into that one particular spot, produces a lot of heat, which then probably produces steam and turns a turbine to generate electricity. So I think that's probably how that works. But this is different. These are actually solar cells. These are like the ones that you have on your roof, similar to that. It's solar cells that actually directly convert it to electricity.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is fascinating. Yeah, I've always been fascinated, even on those older calculators that we used to have. Oh, you know, yeah. Those little solar, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Or we're just like covering it a little, yeah. Like to see.
Just a lot more advanced.
Right. But it is fascinating when you give, you know, great minds the opportunity to think. Like, I would never have thought of that. Mm-hmm. Like that, I can tell you right away. Like, I'm not an innovator like that. But someone was like, you know what? We should harness the sun's energy.
Yeah.
You know? And then someone else was like, we should take it a step farther and we could create energy for places that, you know, are energy deficient. Is that a nice way of saying it?
Well, and renewable energy is essentially, it's a situation where you don't have to burn a fuel in order to produce electricity. You're not burning oil, you're not burning wood, you're not burning anything like that. You're actually, this is just the sun's energy is constant, you know, during the day at least. And it's always going to be there. There's no fuel that you have to put into the system. It's just simply putting the infrastructure down there that actually converts that into electricity.
The scarcity isn't in a raw product. The scarcity is the moon, right?
Infinitely more sunlight that hits our Earth on a daily basis than the actual energy we could ever use. I forget what the stat is, but it's just, we're using just such a small percentage of that sunlight. And if we harnessed, even just a slightly larger percentage than we do now, we could take care of all of our energy needs as a planet and growth into the future.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And also the product itself, you were saying, is getting cheaper. So like that's going to make more people able to do these solar farms because the actual...
The numbers of the deal work better.
Yeah. But what am I trying to say? Like the actual...
The efficiency?
No, the supplies to build it. What would you call that?
The raw materials?
Yeah, I guess the raw materials are...
Yeah, the solar panels, everything else in the supply chain is getting cheaper and cheaper, more advanced. You know, like these panels are producing more electricity for each panel. They're getting more efficient. The price is getting cheaper and cheaper. And we've got manufacturing popping up all over the United States here for solar panels and related items needed for these solar farms. So it's going to be an accelerating trend. You know, technology always gets cheaper, especially as scale grows, as more people start using it. Want to learn the secret to building a thriving land flipping business? Head on over to landconquest.com and join over 2,000 passionate land flippers leveraging the power of community to scale quickly. Sign up for free at landconquest.com. All right, let's get back to the show.
So if this sounds interesting to you, and now we talk about the actual land, right? Mm-hmm. So are there any characteristics of the land that you need to take into consideration?
Not every piece of land is going to work for this, unfortunately. Only, you know, probably a small percentage of the pieces of land will actually work for it. So there's a number of characteristics we're going to go over today, which are things that you should be looking for if you're trying to identify these sites. So, and I'm going to talk to you at the end about how we could potentially work together, how you could profit if you're a real estate agent finding us these deals, or if you are a land investor and you run across one of these properties, how you could financially benefit for bringing us one of these properties.
So, okay. So they'll be able to reach out to you on that.
We'll talk a little bit about the end. So, but for right now, we're going to go over what are the characteristics that make these properties desirable for a solar farm. But first I want to talk a little bit about the scale because there are size of these projects. There's different size of projects, you know. They normally classify these projects by the megawatt. That's about the how much electricity they produce. So they can be as small as 1 megawatt. You know, that's probably the smallest solar farm you're going to find out there. And that's about, you know, 1 megawatt. It takes about 6 acres of land of solar panels to create 1 megawatt. On the smaller end of things, you can go up to about 1 to 5 megawatts. That's kind of a smaller, they call it a community scale solar farm, meaning the electricity generated there is generally going to be going out to the surrounding community, or maybe a local business or a combination of local businesses, something like that.
Wait, I got to stop because we actually did prep for this episode. This is the only episode we've ever prepped for.
Oh, okay.
Where I've actually asked you questions and I've read this beforehand. Mm-hmm. And I learned that when you just said the community, that would be like a community one. And it's because you lose electricity, right?
Yeah. So there are, you know, the farther this electricity travels, you know, once it gets onto these large distribution lines, typically it loses. There's a loss function, I guess they call it. So certain amount of electricity is lost. So when you lose electricity that you generated, basically you're losing money. So you can have what they call a behind the meter solar farm where you're basically, you're next door to a large business or something like that, and you're directly connected to them. They use the power and there's no real loss there. But if you're tying into these distribution lines, these large transmission lines, then there is going to be some sort of loss of power.
And that's why these smaller ones, it makes sense for, it's just for a local community. It's not going as far. I mean, to me, this sounds like, why is every community not putting aside some land to, you know, offset their own electricity?
It makes sense to me. Like I see a lot of, you know, master plan subdivisions and things where they have this kind of open space, and maybe they could work it out in their initial plans that that's kind of the community solar farm there. So I think that type of thing will be happening a lot more in the future.
Yeah, it'd be a big draw, especially in California. Like I love California, very thankful to live here, but electricity is expensive.
Yes, it's one of the most expensive states.
Yeah, and we have rolling blackouts. It's just that we have too many people. It's not which I don't blame them. It's great to live here, but we have too many people, or I shouldn't say too many. We have a lot of people and limited resources.
We need more energy.
Yeah.
We're the leading state in solar energy, by the way.
Yeah, but this makes sense, like because when you're doing new developments or if there is open space, maybe they could do something where it's sometimes you buy mitigation land to protect different animals and stuff. Maybe you could buy a little extra mitigation land to put a closer. I think that'd be an amazing thing.
I want to go a little bit further on the sizing of these solar farms. So 1 to 5 megawatts, that's kind of the community scale, they call it. Then larger, from, you know, say 5 to 20 megawatts, that is, and it's just a math equation when you say 5 to 20 megawatts. You're basically looking for 6 acres of usable, buildable space for every megawatt. So it's just a math equation. So if you've got a 20 megawatt facility, that would be 120 acres, right? So it's just math. So that's kind of the distributed generation, they call it, that type of scale.
And like any other thing that you're doing, like a development or something, you have to have that kind of that extra, you're not going to be able to use every inch of that land, right? So even though you say 6 acres, you might actually need 10 in order to put 6 on there.
Yes. Or, and we're going to talk about some of the things so basically when we're talking about this, we're talking about usable space, you know? So some of the things that can take away from usable space are too sloped setbacks, like you were saying, wetlands, FEMA flood zone, all these areas, you know, these panels can't go in. So it has to be usable space that can be used for these panels. So,
and the slopes would be an issue because they wouldn't get the sunshine, right? You can't move them if it
yeah. Or there has to be a lot of grading that has to happen, which makes the project too expensive and things like that. So
you're looking for like this perfect piece of land, and then you have to take all these considerations into it. Okay.
And then getting bigger than, you know, 20 megawatts, we're pretty much looking at, they call them utility scale. So these are larger projects. They could go up to a gigawatt, you know, like 1,000 megawatts, you know. So these are very, very large projects. You know, normally these really large ones are in the middle of the desert somewhere, you know, where the land is really cheap and there's a lot of sun, and you can kind of do these mega projects.
And no one would complain about like 5,000 acres of solar panels.
Yeah. So that's not really feasible in a lot of areas, but the larger scale projects, they are great, but they take a long, long time to get approved. You know, some of these projects, 3 to 5 years is not out of the question. The smaller projects, you can generally get them done quite a bit faster. And as a company, we're going to be focusing on some of the smaller projects, at least initially, as we get into this solar farm development.
But when you say smaller, you're not talking the community, are you?
Yeah, probably community scale to distributed generation is where we'll be at. So those are kind of the parameters. Those are the different sort of sizes of solar farms that you can look for. So we're primarily interested in that kind of mid to smaller scale, mm-hmm. you know.
Why?
Just because the projects will be able to get approved.
I just like to ask you annoying questions.
I like to get things done quickly. I don't really want to work on a project for 3 to 5 years. I mean, it's fine to have some of those going if you want, but it's tough to run a business, at least especially when you're kind of getting going in a new space where your first project where you ever receive any revenue from is 4 years down the road.
Mm-hmm. If you're lucky.
So, if you're lucky, yeah. And it's something that could happen where it doesn't get approved and
you put 4 years into it and now.
Yeah, so that doesn't sound very exciting to me. Those are the big home runs, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah, right.
Big grand slams, I guess you could say, which is probably good to have one or two of those in the works at all times. But it's not something that's kind of sustaining the day-to-day of the business. So, and I should note that just because we are getting into this solar development space doesn't mean that we are not going to continue with our main business, which has been buying and selling properties, minor subdivisions, improving properties, reselling them. That's all going to remain the same. And we are going to be building that as much as we possibly can moving forward. But this is kind of an add-on to what we're doing there.
I think we both understand how our brains work. And like we're not gamblers. But we like to have excitement, right? And so when we see something that's exciting, like this is exciting to you, we're like, okay, let's do this, right?
It's the next step.
Right. And it's a good annex. It's like, you know, the whole riches and niches is 100% true, but also this is still kind of a niche off of the main niche.
Right. Yeah, true. Well, it allows us to leverage what we already know and build on that and learn some new things, learn lots of new things and make money in a new way.
I could actually see you starting some of the big projects. I could definitely see you doing that. And I think if there's other people out there, start one a year. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after 4 years, hopefully they start to hit and then you've got one a year, you know?
Then you'll be doing pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, that time goes by quick.
Yeah, it really does, actually. Boost your land flipping earnings with our new Land Conquest business system. It's designed for efficiency and effectiveness. This cutting-edge software tool is your key to success in the land flipping industry. Streamline and automate your operations to scale your business to new heights. With our system, you get a customizable website with 6 professional templates to choose from, up to 5 dedicated phone numbers, each with their own chosen area codes for creating a trustworthy local presence. And as a bonus, you'll get a $25 credit for SMS and email sends. You'll also get access to our tech team to build any automations or customizations that you want. And not to mention, we've got a great dedicated community to the Land Conquest business system to help us all thrive together. And with every step of the way, you get our 24/7 live chat support. But that's not all. You'll also gain access to our exclusive community to connect and grow with fellow land flippers. Seize the opportunity to transform your business. Visit software.landconquest.com. to check out the Land Conquest business system and unlock the next stage of your land flipping success. Okay, so let's get into the characteristics of the best sites, which is what this podcast episode is about. One thing that's super, super important when looking at these properties is that it should be within a mile or less of a substation. Now, a substation, you've probably seen them. They're these really ugly looking kind of normally chain link fenced sort of areas on the corner somewhere, and they've got a bunch of weird electrical type things in there. That's generally a substation that you're looking at there. So it's really helpful to be within 1 mile of those substations. There are situations where you can be farther than 1 mile away. It just generally impacts the finances of the project because the utility will probably make you upgrade some of that facility or the lines or different things in order to connect to that. And when you start having to do those extra things on top of what you're going to be spending on site with the project, the numbers start getting out of whack and it may not be even a financially viable project. You can go a little bit further than that in some cases, but if you do, then it's going to kind of be a really perfect piece of land, perfect opportunity where electricity costs are high and things like that. So generally, you want to stay 1 mile or less to a substation. Number one criteria. Also, mostly flat. And when I say mostly flat, generally you could go up to about 15% grade. Even that's kind of on the edge. but you want to stay as flat as possible. And if there is slope to the property, it should be a south-facing slope because these panels are going to be pointed to the south generally because that's the best where the best sun exposure is.
So it's not a feng shui thing.
No, yeah, it's right. So like if you're on like a little bit of a hill, but the hill is pointing towards the north, that's probably not going to work. Like we talked about a little bit, you can do some grading to kind of smooth out the site. There are different racking and thing that you can do with these panels to compensate for the slope a little bit, but the higher the grade you get, the harder that gets to be, and probably the more expensive it is going to be to develop that site.
When you talk about the one, you said like ideally 1 mile, but you said up to 3 miles in certain mm-hmm. circumstances. How do we measure that? Like what are you?
Oh yes. So we use Land ID is kind of our mapping tool that we use.
And is it as the bird flies or is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, okay. Generally. Yeah. So you could just look on a Land ID and there's a measurement tool. So you can turn on different overlays and there's one for substations and you'll see it's like a little green S, almost looks like a dollar sign, but it's not, just stands for substation.
Maybe it is.
Yes. And you just measure from the property to that substation. And if it's around a mile or less, then you should be checking off that criteria. Also access. Access is important. You have to have legal access to the property. If it's a mile down a dirt road or something, that's generally less desirable for sure. If you've got direct access to a public roadway, that's best. Ultimately, it doesn't need to have a ton of road frontage or anything like that, but you do need to have access so crews can get in there with the construction. So that's not going to be a problem. You don't want some long, weird driveway getting up to the top of the hill or something like that. Anytime you add complications like that, it's going to be more expensive and
less desirable,
possibly make it a non-viable project. Also transmission lines. So if you're looking at these larger projects, you know, these bigger scale projects, you know, maybe 100 acres or more, if you are close to these large transmission lines, meaning either they run through your property and their neighboring property or along the street or something like that, that's generally more desirable because you can then tap into those lines and then that's going to be more cost effective. So for the smaller projects, you're going to be tapping into the distribution lines, like the standard electricity lines that you see generally outside on the road or something like that. And normally they call them three-phase lines is what you're looking for.
What about if like the area is all grounded, like it's underground lines?
Yeah, you can still tap into those. Yeah.
Okay, so they have the same mechanism. They're literally just
underground. Yeah, as long as they have the capacity there, you know, to be able to take on additional electricity running through them and they're substantial enough, then you should be able to tap into those. So there's different junction points and things I think along the public roadways where you can tap into them. But also another thing that's important is zoning. Now, some areas are more restrictive than others. And some areas, they'll let you do these types of solar farms pretty much in any zoning with a special use permit, conditional use permit, something like that. Other areas, you have to have one particular zoning. And if it doesn't have that, then it's kind of a no-go unless you get the zoning changed. So that's one thing that's kind of important. You could have all these other things to check the boxes. And then when you get to the zoning, you realize that the local municipality doesn't want you doing a solar farm in that spot because of the zoning that they've established. So you could either go through the steps to try to get that zoning changed, or if you realize that it's just not going to happen, then it's probably best to move on to a different site.
I mean, are you going for the ones that have the established like areas that already we know that like it, like they want it? Or are you kind of saying, well, maybe I'll try to change some zoning? Or are you saying, well, I'm going for the ones that the zoning should be okay. I just have to get it. Like, where is your...
Yeah, so generally, and that kind of ties into another thing I've got a couple down here, but we'll talk about it now, is community sentiment. So that's actually... For what reason I don't understand, there's a segment of people out there that do not want solar farms in their area. I guess they don't like the way they look, or they have this thought that maybe they make their area hotter, or they don't like the... I don't know.
It's called misinformation.
Yes, misinformation.
That's the problem, right?
Because probably spread by the oil companies.
Yeah, or who knows? I mean, I don't know. Yeah, right? Or just well-meaning people that have just kind of fallen into that
wellness trap. Somebody did a video on TikTok and they believe it. Right. So there's a thing called NIMBY, not in my backyard.
Why does that word bother me? Like, it's funny. Don't think I'm that, but like it really like...
Yes. So, you know, this is when you have the local meetings for approval on something and a bunch of people show up and they don't want this, you know, they're outraged by this solar farm being put in, something like that. And, you know, generally, you know, you're not going to have everyone in agreement a lot of times in a lot of these areas. So, you know, if the sentiment for previous solar farms that have gone to get approval in that area, if it's clear that just the community doesn't want it, then you're probably facing an uphill battle. So by doing some simple Google searches, you can find out generally what the community sentiment is. And it's probably easier to spend your time in those areas where they're really supportive of solar energy and they want to bring in these projects to the area. So it's a less of an uphill struggle.
Right. Yeah.
And then also one of the things that's important is that certain states have favorable solar programs. They have community solar programs. They call it special incentives, basically, to allow these projects to be financially viable. There's federal tax incentives, which are amazing with this Inflation Reduction Act as they stand now. Yeah, 30% tax credit on the cost of construction of these projects. And then also there's additional adders to there. So you can actually get up to 60-70% of a tax credit for every dollar that you spend to build these projects in some way. So it's causing a lot of investment in this area, basically. So, but those types of incentives, they're also done on a state level. They allow these projects to be instantly financially viable. And that's where the developers are spending their time because they're being incentivized to actually do these projects there. So there's a number of states that are really in favor of this and pushing to get as much solar generation as they can. So it's probably not a bad idea to work in those types of areas rather than the ones that don't want it. Are you looking for funding for your land flipping deal? Then head on over to partnerwithpete.com. It's an innovative new funding program where we split the profits with you 50-50, but we take it one step further and we handle every other step of the process in the land flipping business. Yes, that means we handle all the due diligence. If the property needs any value add, like clearing brush, perk test, survey, we'll get that paid for up front. Then when the property resells, we split the profits 50-50. There is absolutely no downside for you as an investor. If we lose money, we don't pass that on to you. But when we make money, when we make profit, we split the proceeds 50-50. So as a recap, we handle every part of the process. We split the profits with you 50-50. There's no downside for you as the investor, only upside. So go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and we'll get it checked out within 24 hours.
Yeah, the path of least resistance, right? Yeah. I mean, it will eventually, the tide will change and the states that have been left behind will realize, or the local even counties or whatever. But it just, sometimes it takes time. Progress takes time, right?
That's right.
So go, if this is something you're interested in, go for the ones where, it's kind of like when we were talking about, we've talked about Airbnbs and the past, all that kind of stuff. You'd want to start your business where the rules are already set up.
Right.
You know, because then you go into it knowing, okay, this is what we've got. That's why people kind of had big problems when they set up their whole business and then these local governments were like, oh, we've changed the rules. And you're like, but wait, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just, it makes sense. But, you know, keep your eye out on the other areas because progress happens every day, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I think people are going to be talking about this more. I hope that this stays a viable option. And because I think there is so much opportunity in it. And, you know, you've talked about it before, like the energy need is going to be there. You've talked about the data processing centers, they're going to need electricity, right?
Like, yeah. All the AI, the push into AI is going to dramatically increase the power needs of our country. And not just that, but it's the electrification of all the automobiles. That's happening, whether...
I thought you said electric vacation.
Oh, electric vacation.
Like, what is that? Okay.
Well, I guess that's something. But the electrification of all the automobiles out in the road, you know, that is actually happening. You know, I know that there's pushback on that for some reason, but I know that I have an electric vehicle and you have a plug-in hybrid, it's so nice to not have to go to the gas station, and it's cheaper to drive than filling up with gas. So when you've got the economics behind it and the convenience, then it's just simply a matter of time till that gets adopted. The prices of batteries are getting much cheaper, which is actually going to push down the price of these vehicles. So at some point, they're going to be cheaper than the regular gas cars, and they will be much more convenient and then cheaper to actually operate. So it's simply a matter of time till those completely take over, all the automobiles that are out on the road. So just think of all the power needs that are going to come just from that, you know, and then we've got all these data centers, you know, for AI that's going to be increasingly part of our lives. And it's the power needs are just going to be astronomical. And then when you also talk about things like desalination of water and decarbonization of the atmosphere, there's all kinds of power needs beyond what we're doing now that could be very, very useful to society and most likely very needed in the near future as well.
It'd be interesting to use clean energy to kind of
take
out the dirty energy.
That's right.
You know, the
to decarbonize the atmosphere. Yeah. And then water, you know, like water is a big thing in a lot of areas, and you know, maybe not where you're living, but California, you know, is always California and the whole Southwest is really always it's a struggle for water, you know. And then when we've got all this water sitting in the ocean, just sitting there, and we have the technologies to we have the technologies to remove all the salt and make it
desalination
plants, to desalinate all the water. It just takes power. So
what will the orcas swim in?
They'll have plenty of water still.
I don't know. I think there's probably a bunch of people that are interested in this, thinking, okay, this is right up my alley, but I don't want to do all the steps that you just talked about, but I like finding the deals for for the land. Or a real estate agent that's like, shoot, I've got a listing, this would be perfect for it, but my seller wants, you know, closer to retail. Take it away.
This is kind of different than what we're normally doing. We're always looking for a real steep discount when we purchase these properties. And then we do some things to the property and then resell the property. But this allows us to actually, we can actually pay closer to retail pricing, sometimes retail pricing on the property. And then we can create the value by getting it approved for a solar farm. So if the property kind of checks these boxes, seller wants retail, we can generally do that in a lot of cases, as long as they give us the time during the escrow period in order to get this approved. So might be a longer escrow, but we're going to be spending money during that whole time period on engineering, reports, all these different things in order to get this project approved. But when we get it approved, then we can actually, you know, close on the purchase. So, you know, that could be 6 to 12 months in some of these areas, something like that, for these sizes of projects that we're doing. But for some sellers, it's worth it, you know, to get that retail pricing and not have to worry about discounting at all or taking money out of their pockets. So if you are an agent and you have a listing like this,
or a broker,
and you have a listing like this, or you know of another listing out in the market or whatever that would be perfect for this, all you have to do is go to, we've got a site set up. It's called solarlanddeals.com. And just submit your information and the information about the property on there. That will get to me and my team, and we will evaluate that. And then if it looks like a viable site, you can write the offer for us, you know, get the deal under contract. And when it closes, you'll obviously get the commission on that. And then as well, if you are a land investor and you've identified a site and, you know, maybe the seller wants too much to make it viable for a typical, you know, land investment, but it looks like it's got solar potential, you know, you can submit it on this site as well. We'll take a look. And if it looks like it's viable, we can even then, you can connect us with the seller directly so we can work out the contract and everything like that. And then we will pay you an assignment fee.
Awesome.
So you get paid, you know, when we close on the purchase. So there's lots of different ways to make money in this space, but it's about finding those right pieces of property that kind of have to check these boxes. They're out there. There's plenty of them out there. And it's about timing with these sellers, you know, if they want to sell and when they want to sell and getting their price and all that kind of stuff. But in a lot of the cases, if we can find the right property and the seller actually wants to sell, there's generally a way to put the deal together.
Yeah, it's funny because when we first started, we looked at the land and we evaluated it off just one use, kind of, you know, and now we've kind of, I think you've broadened your perspectives. It's kind of like, what's the highest and best use of each piece of property that comes across your desk or our teams?
I kind of view this as similar to, if you know, a lot of investors are kind of familiar with the process, or at least know of the process of getting a property approved for, say, a residential subdivision. So you got, you know, 50 acres and you want to get 100 home sites on there or something like that. That would be what they consider a major subdivision. Now, that's not a typical, it's not an easy process. It's kind of an extensive process, but it's a lot of the same types of things. You know, you're hiring an engineer, you're hiring, you know, different people to get different aspects of that job done. And then you are going to get the project approved on paper. It's very similar to what we're doing here. It's just different processes, different engineers and things like that. But ultimately, we're trying to increase the value of the property by presenting a shovel-ready project to someone else to actually build it and actually run the facility generally.
Do we have any projects going already?
We do. We have a piece of land that we've owned actually for a while now, but we've recently just decided to move forward with it as a solar project. So that's kind of the first one. And we've got a number of other ones in the works as well.
Awesome. Well, yep. We'll have to share about that once we get farther down.
We will.
Farther down the trail,
yeah.
The path, something. I don't know, something like that. Well, that was a fun 100th episode.
That was.
Here's to 100 more.
100 more. 500 more. We'll keep it going.
500 more. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for watching. And if you aren't a member of our community, you can find that at landconquest.com. Or if you want to go to the school platform directly, which is SKOOL, school.com/landconquest. It's our free community. Almost 5,000 members in there, Heather. And, you know, we're talking about all kinds of things in there. So we'd love for it. Yeah, I'd love for you to join us over there and learn a little bit more about land investing.
Yeah, it's a free community.
Free community. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll see you over there.
We'll see you there.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.